private sector jobs shrink again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, March 31st at marketplace.org. I'm Bill Radke. This morning we got a new report on private employment in this country. Experts thought it would show job growth for a change, and it didn't. We'll tell you what that means in a moment. But first, where's Wall Street? Well, the market's opening lower this morning with the S&P 500 down 0.6%. The NASDAQ is off 0.5%, and the Dow is now down 70 points at 10,837. That jobs report is definitely not helping things. European stocks have fallen off since that news came out. They're down about 0.5% now. And Asian markets fell about 0.5% today. Okay, time to talk with Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research. He comes to us live from Washington, D.C. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Bill.
So this news on private sector payrolls comes from a company called ADP Employer Services, and it's disappointing. 23,000 more jobs gone. Richard, what does that tell you?
Well, it's bad news because the government already told us that we saw the private sector lose about 18,000 jobs last month in February. I was expecting that to finally switch over to a substantial gain, given that February was so badly afflicted by terrible weather. ADP is now telling us that's probably not the case, and if we saw any gains at all, they're probably more modest than people were assuming. So on balance, just a little bit disappointment.
And that's the private sector. The bigger report comes Friday with the government's official unemployment rate and its right. Look at private plus public sector jobs. Is that a different picture?
It is. And the reason is because we're doing the census right now, and census hiring is just ramping up in a big way. So despite what ADP is telling us, it's still likely we're going to see job growth in March, though mostly for temporary reasons having to do with the census collection of information.
Well, that's what I want to know. If the government hiring is propping us up, how scary is that?
Well, it's good news, bad news. I mean, it's when the private sector is not providing jobs, that's a good opportunity for the government to fill the void. So better that than nothing at all. On the other hand, it's nothing we can count on as a sustainable proposition, especially since we already know that these census workers are going to get laid off in the second half of this year. So kind of good news, but it's not very encouraging from a longer perspective.
Okay. Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research, thank you.
My pleasure.
President Obama is reversing a longstanding ban on offshore drilling. Today he will announce plans for oil drilling 50 miles off Virginia's shorelines and expanded oil and gas exploration in the Arctic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here to tell us why.
At an energy security event in Maryland today, President Obama will open up more than 100 million acres offshore to oil and gas exploration. What would remain off limits, at least through 2017, would be the eastern seaboard from New Jersey to Maine, southwest Alaska's rich fishing grounds, and the entire Pacific coast. The administration's aim is to increase domestic energy supplies. Tony McCauley of The Economist's Energy Briefing says that's a likely result given how much oil the Gulf of Mexico is already producing.
The Gulf of Mexico oil is contributing to the policy goal that the Obama administration has stated, which is to reduce dependence on imported oil. So I think that would be a strong argument for maintaining the U.S.'s efforts to find domestic oil.
Environmentalists and legislators from many coastal states, though, oppose drilling as a risk to tourism and fishing. Opening up new offshore fields could take years, with environmental and geographical reviews, court challenges, and ultimately public lease sales to oil companies. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
A United Nations summit in New York today is aiming to raise nearly $4 billion to fund recovery efforts in Haiti. Officials say that is just a fraction of what rebuilding will ultimately cost. But with hurricane season fast approaching, development experts say immediate relief is needed. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
More than 100 countries will be represented at the summit. They'll be asked to reach deep into their pockets to help rebuild schools, hospitals, roads, and housing. Haitian President René Préval will present a 50-plus page action plan. The plan calls this opportunity to rebuild a rendezvous with history that Haiti cannot miss.
The big challenge now is supporting the Haitian government to assume control and authority over its own plan.
Steve Hollingworth is chief operating officer of the relief group CARE. He recognizes that many have been critical of the government's response to the earthquake, but he says before the disaster, the group saw some encouraging signs of cooperation.
These are things that the international donor community, the international NGO community can only do in conjunction with the government of Haiti, and we've got to support them now.
The plan calls for developing regional economic hubs outside of Port-au-Prince. The capital city was home to more than 65% of the country's economic activity. Wesleyan University's Alex Dupuy says decentralization is critical, but not if it means creating more low-wage garment industry jobs.
If the intention is to build more of these factories and to emphasize selective agricultural crops for export, then nothing will fundamentally change.
Dupuy says one priority is for Haiti to return to food self-sufficiency. He says the country is the world's fourth largest importer of rice from the U.S. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Today, the Federal Reserve is kicking away one of its props for the housing market. The Fed will stop buying mortgage-backed securities issued by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer looks at what this means for housing and home buyers.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac buy mortgages from banks and resell them as mortgage-backed securities. As long as Freddie and Fannie can find buyers, mortgage rates stay low. When the housing market collapsed, nobody wanted these securities. So the Federal Reserve stepped in and bought about $1 trillion worth. Economist Catherine Mann of Brandeis University says now private investors can take over.
Until the Federal Reserve starts to relinquish its role, the rest of the financial sector has no incentive to get back in the saddle.
Zach Pandel is an economist with Nomura Securities. He thinks it's a gamble for the Fed to step aside.
But the housing recovery is very wobbly at this point. So removing this program, which could potentially lead to higher mortgage rates, may keep the recovery quite weak for some time.
Pandel says the Fed has made it clear it will step back in if mortgage rates get too high. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The housing market is one flashpoint for this economy, and another, of course, is employment. This morning, we got the news from the company ADP Employer Services that the private sector shed another 23,000 jobs in March. And a report from the government on unemployment comes out Friday. That's expected to show employers added some jobs. Some kinds of companies are bouncing back faster than others. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, in this recovery, it's good to be global.
If you dig into the quarterly reports of big U.S. companies, you'll notice that many of them are relying on growth overseas to cushion any losses here at home. That's the case from medical device makers to McDonald's.
And those companies with the international stretch are helped more and quicker as economies recover in the global marketplace.
That's Ronald McNeil, dean of the business school at the University of Illinois Springfield. He says small businesses can benefit, too, if they play their cards right, perhaps by selling to larger companies that already export their business overseas. But Liz Ann Saunders, the chief investment strategist at Charles Schwab, says small businesses have one big disadvantage: access to capital.
Big companies typically don't have to go to banks to borrow money. They can come to the capital markets. They can issue bonds. They can issue stocks. So they can expand. They can invest.
That, she says, will keep large multinationals ahead of smaller companies in the U.S. race to recovery. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And here's a surprise. The economic downturn has been driving the Brits away from drink. Spending on booze in the U.K. fell by a record amount during the recession. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that.
This is not supposed to happen. Tougher times should mean more people hit the bottle. But Britain's Office of National Statistics says the latest figures show the opposite. Sales of wine, spirits and beer in the U.K. have dropped. They fell by more than 6% last year, the largest fall in almost 50 years. The alcohol industry blames economizing by consumers during the recession and a 25% hike in alcohol taxes over the past 2 years. Stephen Barton runs Brand Phoenix, one of Britain's biggest wine distributors.
No other industry has experienced a tax hit as the alcohol industry have in the most and steepest recession we've seen in a generation.
Health campaigners, however, have welcomed the drop in alcohol sales. They claim that alcohol abuse costs the state-run National Health Service more than $4 billion a year. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The new healthcare law contains a lot of changes. Los Angeles Times business columnist David Lazarus says one untold story is how our approach to disease prevention might be evolving. Morning, David.
Good morning.
How is this healthcare law going to help us prevent disease?
Well, it's going to sound like hyperbole, but in reality, the healthcare law represents a sea change in how the United States is going to approach healthcare. Up until now, the emphasis has been on waiting until people have a problem and then prescribing costly treatments to deal with it. This is why we spend twice as much per capita in the United States on healthcare than other countries. The difference now is going to be a new emphasis on prevention and wellness, which sounds a little bit wonky, but what that means is getting in front of illness before it happens.
Getting in front of illness how?
Well, in reality, what you want to do is give incentives to healthcare providers to keep you fit. And that's what this does. For example, under the Medicare and Medicaid changes, healthcare providers are going to now have an incentive to keep their patients feeling well, feeling good, before they have problems. In fact, they'll be rewarded for that. Their reimbursements will go up if they can keep people fit.
Do you think a change that big in our mindset toward healthcare can really come from top down, from Congress?
I think it's all about being well informed about your options and giving people incentives to be healthier. Here's another thing that's in the bill. There are going to be now incentives for businesses, large and small, to provide wellness programs to employees. In some cases, you'll be able to get up to 50% off your monthly healthcare premiums if you participate in these programs and do well. That's a heck of an incentive.
Okay, David, so maybe the government's throwing money at some very worthy ideas, but how do we know this is going to be worth all that the cost?
Well, we won't know until we try. And in fact, the healthcare reform law allots about $15 billion over 10 years to try to promote prevention and wellness among people. That's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, especially for something where we're talking about savings of $1 trillion over 20 years. Now, if it were easy, we would have done this years ago. Clearly, some sort of incentive needs to be out there. That's what this is about.
LA Times business columnist David Lazarus, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, you know how sometimes police will let you drive 70 in a 65? You get that cushion of 5 or 10 miles an hour before they pull you over? USA Today reports cities and states are now counting on those fines to help them out of debt, and troopers are newly strict. So don't be surprised if an officer walks up to your window and says, "Ma'am, do you have any idea how fast our deficit is growing?" This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
Even after the dust settles and the economy picks back up, there's still the leftovers, like all those old abandoned auto plants.
And all the noise and all the nice quality trucks that we rolled off the line. And every day you come in, you look around and you just can't believe that it's shut down.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, sifting through the recession's wreckage, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.